could walk right into the Holy of Holies. You can become the Holy of Holies if you invite him in to live in your life. So Jesus stands right in that spot that was the epicenter of their entire religious system. And he said, this is all going to be left desolate. And it was pretty hard to believe. It did happen, just like he said. So the disciples go down and they're sitting on that perfect photo op. If they'd have had cameras, they could have taken beautiful pictures of the sun glinting off those impressive buildings. I think we put a picture of one of those foundation stones. By the way, that's all that's left of this temple, is some of the foundation stones. The first time I went to Israel 40 years ago, you couldn't see any of them except one little portion of the what's called the Wailing Wall, which is a tiny, tiny portion, the upper portion. But most of them were buried under 30 to 40 feet of rubble. Now we walk through a tunnel. We went almost completely all the way along that western side of the Temple Mount. It's kind of scary if you're claustrophobic because you're way down there. But these stones, we took a picture, I think, and put one on the website of one of these foundation stones. I think, didn't we figure it had to be 50 or 60 feet long? And probably 12 feet high, 20 feet, I've heard 20 feet deep. They've ground penetrating radar. They've been able to tell you the dimensions of the part that you can't see. Now picture walls 100 feet high and a plateau 440,000 square feet surrounded by marble columns 37 feet high. That was the porch, the portico. And then in the center, this building, this polished marble-faced building, almost 250 feet high. Taller than the tallest of all of the Gothic cathedrals in Europe by a substantial amount. All the gold. And they're saying, really? Really, Jesus? I mean, can it be all wrong? We've got this huge building. Something must be right. Ever been to the Vatican? Ever been to the Vatican Art Museum? Incalculable wealth. It's just unbelievable. And you look at that system and it's so tempting to say, how can it be wrong? Look how big it is. When I was in Bangkok, Thailand, I went to one of the largest Buddhist temples in the world. I don't know how many, I can't even remember the statistics now, but it was like a small city. All for a 3-foot-high jade Buddha statue idol. Can it be so wrong? Look at all the money, look at all the time, look at the structure. There's a wonderful scripture in Hebrews, very end of Hebrews chapter 12. It's been going through my mind because it is a revelation of God's agenda for this earth. It's a revelation of God's agenda for me personally and you personally. The last two or three verses, God says, I'm going to shake everything that can be shaken. And my purpose is so that the only things remaining are going to be the things that can't be shaken. I'm just going to shake everything, including the whole earth. And just let's just see how it all comes out, because the only thing that's going to be left standing is the unshakable stuff. Let's talk about that for a minute, because I think this is often misunderstood. In fact, when God does that for me personally, when he looks at my life and he sees things that if I build on them, I'm going to fall, because they're going to fall. If he looks at any I can't even think of the word I'm looking for. Any delusions that I have about my own abilities or anything that I build my future on that can't hold me, God is going to shake it. Actually, he's doing us a favor whenever he does that, because we need to know, can this stand? But when it's being shaken so often, it's so disillusioning, because it's all we have. I'm watching people who are being so disillusioned by a religious system that they've put all their trust and all their faith in, and now they're finding about, you know, that for generations, their religious leaders have been molesting children, and they're so disillusioned with it, they just want to throw God out completely. And I want to raise my hand and say, look, God's not the problem. You need to lean on him and not on the system. And I think that if you take Hebrews chapter 12 and you apply it to the very world that we're living in, which is what God was doing when he allowed it to be recorded, he said, I'm going to shake everything, including the earth. Interesting that the Bible talks about in the very, very last days, the earth is going to stagger like a drunk. Interesting phrase. We are, by the way, getting farther and farther off our axis, aren't we? I heard an astonishing figure about the sequence of earthquakes in Japan and how that tilted us even forward. Just in that one part of the world, threw us even. What happens when a top that's spinning straight up and down, when it starts slowing down, it starts wobbling, doesn't it? And it goes shooting across the room. The Bible says that's the way it's going to be with this entire earth. And God says, I'm going to shake everything. And I think he has done that certainly personally in my life. That's how you find out what you're leaning on, isn't it? So why would Jesus tell them? He doesn't want them to panic. He doesn't want them to put their weight on something that can fail. Here's my philosophy. You can take it or leave it. If I'm leaning on it, and it's not God, and God didn't put it there, it needs to fail. I need it to. In fact, the more weight I'm leaning on it, the more I need it to fail before I put any more weight on it. So that's God's protection. So Jesus looks and he says, boys, I know it looks impressive, but in a very short period of time, God isn't even going to be there. God isn't going to be anywhere near this place. And it's all coming down. When you look at Bible prophecy, you know, some people say, oh, it's so confusing. It's so confusing. And then they don't study it. And I think that's a really big mistake. Yeah, it is confusing, especially if you're not actually using the Bible. But it's surprisingly accurate, and it's surprisingly detailed. But the one thing, I don't know if you've seen any of the apocalypse movies that have been coming out, because of the Mayan calendar and all that, so a lot of them have 2012 involved, and they're kind of hilarious. The one about, you know, the whole world is coming to an end, but a guy in a Chevy station wagon is outrunning everything, you know, and then he gets in a plane, and then he's able to outrun the firestorm, and then he just, you know, coincidentally discovers a bunch of people up way up high in the Tibetan mountains have built arcs. How fortuitous. And the arcs are going to actually capture a certain portion of humanity, and they're going to surf to glory on the big one that comes in. The triumph of the human spirit. Very popular theme. All of these events that Jesus foretells, and certainly not all of Bible prophecy about the end time, but at least the ones that he foretells, people get that confused and think God is going to finally unload on this planet, that this is God's judgment. And I'm not certain that all of that is God's judgment. God doesn't really need to judge us. All he has to do is take his hand off. That's all that would be needed. For all of the institutions of man to come down is for God to just not intervene. God to say, okay, you guys don't want me? I'm out of here. So, and a lot of the things that we see described in here are just the effects of people saying to God, we don't want your will. And God says, okay, not my will, your will be done. We are capable of a great amount of damage, aren't we, as a species? Jesus said, it's all coming down. Took 46 to 80 years to build the temple precincts, and it just depends on what part of it you're talking about, but quite a feat. Like I said, stones the size of boxcars, and Jesus said, it's all coming down, and not one stone will be left on top of another. Very emphatic, specific language in the Greek text. They will all be thrown down. Every single one will be thrown down. If you're interested in such things, the word thrown for that verb, thrown down, kataluthe is the Greek word, one of those great compound words. It literally means loosened down. It's not speaking of a tidal wave. It's not speaking of a wrecking ball. It's not speaking of a tactical nuclear device. It's not speaking of a fleet of bulldozers. It's systematic. It's every stone is going to be literally dismantled from the structure until there's nothing left standing. What a funny way to describe such a cataclysmic event. All of the four of the gospel, well, not John, because John wrote so much later, but all of the other gospel accounts were written before the historical event happened, which I think is significant. I think one of the primary proofs of the truth of the Bible is Bible prophecy. In AD 70, Titus, the Roman general, heading the 7th Legion, surrounded Jerusalem, set it to siege. They'd had enough of these rebellious people. The last-ditch effort of people who were hiding themselves from when the Romans finally came in and were destroying the population and looting and pillaging. The last refuge of some of the people was to run into the temple itself, into the very place where only priests were allowed, filled with refugees. Titus, being a man for a warlord of some compassion, told all of his soldiers, do not touch the temple. You can destroy everything else. Don't touch the temple. And the reason the Jews ran in there was because they thought we're safe. Surely, this is the most important place on earth. Nobody can touch this. One drunken soldier, not following orders, and the pandemonium, threw a torch in. It caught on fire. Because of the structure of the building, it turned into a blast furnace. It just vaporized and incinerated in a matter of seconds. All of the people. The flames got hotter and hotter, and it melted all of the gold that was around the top. When you see a model of it, the gold was like a crown around the top. Melted it all, seeped down into the cracks, all the way down into the cracks of those stones. When it cooled, and they were going in to see what survived, they realized that most of the gold was in the cracks of those stones. And so the Roman soldiers, this is history, some 35, 37 years after Jesus said this was going to happen, the Roman soldiers came in and pried every single stone apart from the others in that structure. And not one stone was left on top of another, not one. Gee, what a coincidence. I mean, couldn't a God have just flicked his little finger and just knocked that whole place over? Was it the judgment of God that the Romans destroyed it in this way? Well, if you want to say the judgment of God was God says, I'm not going to protect your temple anymore. I'm out of here. By God abandoning it, then I guess that would be his judgment. But we're perilously close to that, aren't we? Most of the enlightened countries around the world are trying to squeeze God out What if he says, okay? What if God says, okay, you don't want me? You don't want to, you know, kids to be able to pray in schools? You want, you know, you want to say that there is no God? There are many, many, many gods. When God says, no, there's only one, I'm him. What if he says, okay, I'm out of here? Interesting that Jesus predicted and it happened exactly. There's only really one visible section of it today, unless you go on the tunnel tour and go down and see the foundation stones, and that's what the Jews call the Wailing Wall. And it's quite small by comparison. It's a pretty good sized wall, but it's a tiny part of what was this whole temple. Sometime later in the chronology of events, we don't exactly know how long, I guess we don't need to know, but Jesus is sitting there on the Mount of Olives contemplating all of this, and the three problem children along with Andrew, for their own private information, came to him and said, Master, when are all of these things going to happen? One of three questions they asked. All of these things, what things? Well, what Jesus had said in the temple precincts to the religious leaders, that your house is going to be a wasteland. The system that you've created is going to be desolated and abandoned and deserted. And then he said, not one stone's going to be left on top of it. And they said, when is this going to happen? He does not actually in Matthew or Mark answer that question. And inquiring minds want to know, don't we? In Luke, he does. In Luke chapter 21, if you're interested, he tells them, he said, when you see the enemy, your enemy, surrounding the city, that's when it's going to happen. Interesting that the ones of the disciples who heard him say this, the ones that were not martyred very shortly after his resurrection, did live to see it in their lifetime. The other things that he says, he distinguishes them down in verse 8 as the beginnings of birth pains. And we'll spend the rest of our time looking at his comments. I told you the three questions. I'll give it again. The three questions that Matthew records, they asked him. Number one, when's all this stuff going to happen? When's the temple coming down? And then the second question, what is going to be the sign of your coming? Because remember, he told them that he was going to come back. And what will be the sign of the end of the aeon, A-I-O-N, the world, the age? Hard to imagine, like I said, that this would all happen and it would not be the end of the world. Can I just vent about the internet? Okay, yes, Bob, yes, you can. I don't think humans were ever meant to know every horrible thing that happens on planet Earth within a few seconds of when it happened. Our brains can't grab it. It has the reverse effect of information. Rather than informing us, it numbs us out. Are you already over the horrible devastation of Japan? Now that more time is being given to the latest stupid thing that Charlie Sheen has said, or who fell down on Dancing with the Stars. And, you know, it's old stuff now. After being bombarded 24/7, it's not old stuff to those people who everything they knew about their life and all the people they loved are gone. I find that my heart just gets so burdened, because at the same time I'm knowing that and seeing graphic pictures of it, I'm also, if you just hang on a second and don't go get that Pepsi right now, we'll show you 50 more horrible things that are happening in other parts of the earth that you can't change. And the effect just numbs your brain out. The thing I find myself yearning for, I remember when we went to Philadelphia and we heard the guy there in the Independence Hall. And then we went down to Williamsburg and we heard the guy there. And they were talking about how long it took people to find out that We had declared our independence. It was however fast you could ride a horse and get to one guy, and however fast he could ride a horse and get to another guy. And you just long, don't you, sometimes for those days where something horrible could happen? Of course, now all you need to do is see the mushroom cloud. You see the mushroom cloud, you know, it's too late. They heard him talk about this, and all they knew was about to come to an end. They didn't even believe that he was going to die. Their minds are just being absolutely jerked to complete stop from what they had expected was going to happen. Why are you saying all this, Bob? Because when he told them all of these things, he said, don't panic. This is the plan. You're okay. You're mine. You stay with me. And the reason I'm saying that is because I'm watching people that I know. I'm watching their whole world come crumbling down. Some of it started a couple of years ago with that whole banking scandal. Some of them, their world has been shaken because their world was built on shakable stuff. And all their blocks came crashing down, so to speak. And now what they're doing is they're trying to get all their blocks and get them stacked up again. And I think that can be a horrible waste of energy, given what we know about what's happening on this planet. But we certainly, Peter says in 2 Peter chapter 3, after he spends a little bit of time writing his letters to the early church, telling them about what's going to go down, repeating actually some of the things that Jesus said. Peter said, seeing how all of this is going to be destroyed, what kind of people ought you to be? That's a really good question for a fisherman, isn't it? With spirit-filled fishermen. But, I mean, I think it's a sobering question. What kind of people ought we to be if it's coming down the way Jesus says it is? Well, certainly not materialistic people. Certainly not people who are putting all our hope in a change of government. Don't get me wrong. I'd love to see a change in government. But I'm not putting my hope in it. I'm not putting my hope in people because people are the problem. I'm just putting my hope in Jesus. Let's look at these Odin labor pains.